We're going to move next to our second item, which is draft advisory opinion 2024-13, DSCC Montanans for Tester and Gallego for Arizona. And we do have counsel here, so if you want to go ahead and come on up to the table. And for the Office of General Counsel, I see on the screen Mr. Lipchak from the Policy Division. So Mr. Lipchak, whenever you are ready, if you could give us a presentation about this one.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 2442A, 2442B, and 2442B1 are alternative draft responses to an advisory opinion request submitted by the DSCC, Montanans for Tester, and Gallego for Arizona, two authorized committees. The requesters propose to form two joint fundraising committees, each comprised of the DSEC and one of the authorized committees. Each joint fundraising committee proposes to air television advertisements featuring the participating candidate and soliciting contributions to the joint fundraising committee. The requesters ask whether and how the cost of the proposed advertisements should be allocated between the participants and their joint fundraising committees, and whether an on-screen joint fundraising notice must appear in the advertisements. Draft A concludes that each joint fundraising committee may pay for all the cost of the advertisements and allocate all cost among the committee's participants according to the joint fundraising agreement, because the advertisements constitute joint fundraising activity containing a solicitation. Draft A also concludes that each proposed advertisement may satisfy the joint fundraising notice requirement by including a QR code that directs viewers to a fundraising webpage that displays the complete joint fundraising notice. Draft B concludes that each joint fundraising committee may pay for only the portion of the proposed advertisements that solicit contributions for the joint fundraising committee and allocate only that portion of the costs among the committee's participants. Draft B also concludes that each proposed advertisement must include the joint fundraising notice. Revised Draft B reaches the same conclusions as Draft B. However, the revised draft clarifies that the payment prong of the coordinated communication test would be met if the joint fundraising committee paid the entire cost of the proposed ads, and states that the joint fundraising notice must appear as part of the ad and cannot solely appear on the fundraising webpage linked to by the ad. We received 6 comments on the request and 7 comments on the draft advisory opinions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lipchak, for that rundown of those drafts and for noting the number of comments that we received. Let me open it up to colleagues for questions for Policy Division, questions for requesters, counsel, or point of discussion. Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Thank you. And thank you to the requesters council for being here. Thank you for all the comments. This has been quite active. We put together charts internally so we can track what's going on with these questions and the next AO that we're going to be dealing with. So there are some seriously weighty issues. We are what, 25, 26 days out from an election. And this is timely, but very hard to do in a time crunch. So let me just start with some questions for the requester. And, you know, you've submitted the requests and 2 comments, and there have been multiple other comments. It can be hard for us to track them and follow which arguments are what. So I'd really just like to give you the opportunity to summarize your comments and any additional feedback that we can see here to make clear what your argument is.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning. First, I want to say I realize that we submitted 2 expedited requests in October of an election year. So I want to thank the commission staff. I know this has been a lot of work and a lot of serious consideration has gone into these matters. And I just want to recognize on the front that I'm very appreciative of that. And I've always been appreciative of this body and the advisory opinion process, which I think is very important. The core of the requests here is something extraordinary. And I think a lot of comments attempt to suggest that this is just a routine question being posed to the commission, that this kind of joint fundraising has been going on forever, nothing to see here. So I want to address this head on. This is extraordinary. We have never in any election cycle seen joint fundraising committees paying for television advertising. The reason this is extraordinary, and again, this is my opinion, I'm not the Federal Election Commission, that's why I'm here, but in my opinion, the reason it is extraordinary, it is fundamentally contrary to the very statute that this body is charged with enforcing. The question the commission has to answer today. Sorry, let me actually start with the statute. The act, as passed by Congress, says that spending by a national party committee to influence a candidate's election when done in coordination with that candidate is a contribution subject to limits. Hard stop. That is what the statute says. The question the commission needs to answer today is whether a regulation that permits the practice of joint fundraising should be read to swallow that statute and read out contribution limits from the act. It is a fundamental principle of administrative law that a regulation cannot be read to trump a statute. The commission should decline to do this.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, please. It's also a fundamental principle of our approach to law in this country that attorneys represent clients. And so my question to you is, what is your client's position? I understand your personal opinion on the law, which I guess I will take as expert testimony. The question before us is not, this is not a rule of general applicability. This is an advisory opinion. This is not a question as to the validity of a regulation. It's a question as to its application. I have a draft in front of me that asks to run a particular ad by particular clients whom you represent. You don't have standing to be here, they do. And my question is, I guess fundamentally, do they want to run this ad? And if so, subject to what approach to allocation? Like, what are you asking us to do? Because that was a windup for a rulemaking petition, not with respect to the particular communication.
I appreciate the question, Commissioner, and I want to be very direct with the Commission because I think that's an important question. What my client wants to do is run this ad. If today the Commission, with four or more votes, approves this particular ad, we might change the issues in the script. It might not be about capping the cost of insulin, it might be about something else, but I'll be very transparent. I have a call at 4 o'clock today to start doing this, should the commission approve it. We are going to run this ad, and we are here because my client wants to run this ad if the commission is going to say that it is legal. And I give that background because the commission needs to apply that statute to the exact proposed conduct, right? That is the fundamental question.
In that case, do you have an argument for why we should say yes to your client's interest? And if not, are you familiar with the Clean Hands Doctrine?
The argument to say yes is many commenters have made it, right? It's not that there's, I disagree with it, but the argument that it is okay is that there is technically a solicitation at the end of the
day. What is your argument as counsel for a client that wants to do this, that we should say yes to the course of conduct your client is asking us to say yes to?
I'm asking the commission that question.
I'm not their lawyer. You are.
I'm going to let Ms. Lopez answer.
I don't believe the conduct is permissible. That's why I'm here. And I told my client that I don't believe it is. But if the commission disagrees with me, because there isn't a square answer to this. Let me just say it this way. There's nothing in commission precedent, I don't believe, that squarely answers this question. There is an ambiguity. My read of the law is that the ambiguity errs in favor of the statute. But that is why I'm here asking the commission the question.
But Mr. Chairman, you're not asking the question. They are.
I'm recognized Commissioner Dickerson right now. Go on.
And I mean, you've already broken privilege by telling me what you told them in terms of the law. Like, I'm asking you, like, you're here on behalf of a client that wants us to say yes. If they don't want us to say yes, you should withdraw this. If they want us to say yes, I would like to hear from their attorney the best argument for the course of conduct that the client would like to see occur.
I guess I'm not following a requirement in FICA that if you ask a question, you have to want the answer to be yes. I don't know where that is required.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
That's why I asked what your client wanted to do.
My client wants to know if this conduct is legal, because if it is legal, they would like to do it.
So they want us to say yes.
They want you to answer the question as to its legality so they can have that answer and then plan accordingly, which is exactly what the advisory opinion process is designed to do. So allow a member of the regulated community to come with a complicated, tough question and ask the commission to weigh in. If the commission says it's legal, they want to do it.
Commissioner Linnemann.
Thank you. And thank you for getting back. I think that when we have a requester here, we get to let the requester answer the questions that are asked and not cut them off in the middle of responding to the question. I think the requester was doing a pretty good job explaining how a regulation doesn't trumpet the law. I think that's something that we've been pretty clear about here. And as she said, an advisory opinion can come in a lot of different forms. And our job here is to make sure that everybody knows the rules and is playing by the same rules when they are campaigning here. And again, we are 25 days out or something like that. And I think this is an absolute valid question to bring to us. They don't think they should be able to do this, but if this commission says they can, well, then they're going to go do it and they're going to campaign. And that is why it is absolutely acceptable for us to have this question before us. And I think all these comments also help make that case. So we all have different versions of what an election should look like and what this body should do. I do not think that we should be making law in the enforcement process. I think a response that says to them, well, you should go ahead and, you know, try this if you think this is acceptable and deal with the complaints on the back end is absolutely the wrong way to do it. I think everybody should know what the rules are as they're campaigning. So I fundamentally reject any attempt to get around answering an advisor opinion that comes before us. So let's go back to it. So practically speaking, how much money would you anticipate your client would raise in a contribution from an advertisement like the one proposed, where a QR code is up for 4 seconds? You know, do you think they're going to raise any money?
So I will answer this question not as a professional campaign fundraiser, because that none of us are professional campaign fundraisers, right? So I think you have to look at it as just an average person who's going to view this advertisement. And the only way that you can donate in response to the advertisement we have proposed as laid out in our request is if you manage during 4 seconds to take out a different device, a cell phone, an iPad. I don't have a full working knowledge of everything that can capture a QR code. A lawyer, don't look for a tech agency, but let's say a cell phone in 4 seconds, get it out, capture that QR code, and then visit an external website and effectuate a donation. I anticipate that not many Americans sit in front of their televisions with their cell phones at hand ready to capture QR codes. So I would assume the amount of money that is actually going to be raised would be quite low, necessitating that in order to finance TVs at a joint fundraising committees, what you actually have to do is just front load cash into them on the front end, not proceeds from fundraising, but just advance money into them, pay for the ads that will never be properly recouped because the ads are not actually raising much money. But again, I will be very transparent. I'm saying this just as a person who is looking at the rational facts. I'm not a professional.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, please.
So if we were to say yes, you could do this, would you feel like there was anything stopping you from setting up a joint fundraising committee with a 99% of the contribution going to the party committee and 1% to the candidate committee. And the JFC runs an advertisement with 26 seconds of a 30-second ad, or 80% is pure candidate advocacy, and the last 4 seconds is a QR code and solicitation. Is there anything stopping that from happening?
No. So again, I think there's two ways to look at this, because I want to be responsive to Commissioner Dickerson's comment that, what am I asking? And I'm asking to evaluate the exact ad presented, right? So on this ad presented, the allocation we set forth is 2/3 to the DSCC, the next 1/3 to the campaign committee. And there would be 4 seconds where you get the oral, sorry, my team donate today, and a QR code. So under that framework, it would allow, nothing would stop the DSCC from advancing 2/3 of funds into the Joint Fundraising Committee because the Joint Fundraising Regulations say a participant can advance funds proportional to the allocation formula. So we can put $750,000 into the Joint Fundraising Committee, have the campaign kick in a third, make a TV buy, and then pay for that TV buy two-thirds from the DSCC, whether or not that fundraising ad ever raises a single dollar. That's what it would allow. Now, outside of the context of this advisory opinion, and the commission would be free to say the facts are materially different, but if you analogize, you could set the allocation formula to be 99.9% DSCC, 0.1% campaign, now transfer in $999.99, transfer in a penny from a campaign committee, and go pay for a 29-second TV ad that instead of having a QR code actually now just has a phone number at the end, that if you call that phone number, it's dedicated to taking donations, which is a solicitation under 11 CFR 300.2, pay for that $1 million television buy using $999,000 from the DSCC.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you for that. And so I certainly understand my colleague's perspective that we take the facts that are given to us in an AO. But again, and of course, we always have a disclaimer at the end of our AO that says this is the specific facts. But the way people practice law, right, is to analyze the advisory opinions and try to see where their facts and how far they can push it here. So again, I think something of this magnitude requires us to look at what, how far this could go. And again, you're asking for 4 seconds at the end of an ad on the disclaimer screen. But it's not clear that if we approve this, that maybe somebody's going to go for 1 second or half a second or somewhere throughout the ad in a little tiny corner of the screen, you know, where you can barely see it, or as you said, just the phone number. And I think that is also our responsibility to think of as we are thinking about if we are going to approve this and give an answer of yes, what is our limiting, how are we going to limit this? And I think that's an absolute responsibility we have here because we know how far this is going to get pushed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Dickerson.
And I think the limiting principle is the facts in front of us. That's, again, and you know, that's why I mentioned this in the last matter, which was perhaps somewhat less controversial. You know, the advisory opinion process is not intended to make rules of general applicability. I understand the practical aspect of how people read advisory opinions, but that was never Congress's intent. And that's just not the legal effect of an advisory opinion, just as a matter of law. People who think that are simply mistaken. So, you know, on this one, let me ask the question, because I found the comments kind of contradictory on this point. Like, is it the position, again, of your client that that the QR code is or is not a solicitation? Is that portion a solicitation or not?
I believe the position of my client is that a QR code itself, yes, is a solicitation. The Act and Commission regulations only define a solicitation in the context of BCRA. And part of that definition, and I'm not quoting verbatim, going off my memory, is that if you direct to a web page that is itself dedicated to fundraising, that is a solicitation. So yes, I would say, my client would say, a QR code is a solicitation. And I think, Commissioner Dickerson, to be very direct with you about the question that we are asking, and we're not asking anything else of the commission. I'm not asking you to opine on whether 99.9% is allowed or not. I'm asking the question of, under the ad presented to the commission, does the fact that a 4-second solicitation appears, and we acknowledge in the request that's a solicitation. If you have a QR code up, if someone says donate today, that's a solicitation. You're being solicited. Whether that 4-second solicitation allows the joint fundraising regulation to trump the plain text of the statutory language that says expenditures by National Party Committee to influence the candidate's election or contribution. That is a fundamental question we're asking you to answer on the narrow facts of our exact advertisement being presented and nothing more.
Mr. Chairman. Yes. Well, in that case, I mean, I'm still confused, like, because I read this on page 5 of your comment on the drafts. You know, it talks about For advertising that does not include a solicitation, the commission requires allocation on a time-space basis. That's precisely the test suggested by requesters. So it seems to me you're asking me to do it on time-space, even though that's not actually the proposal in the advisory opinion. Can you deconflict that for me? Because I found it very confusing.
Yes. The question that we are asking you to answer is what portion of the advertisement is a joint fundraising solicitation that should be allocated according to 102.17, and what portion of the advertising has no solicitation and therefore is subject to the general statute and the commission's implementing regulations on coordinated communication.
Right, but are you asking me to say yes or no to two-thirds, one-third, or yes or no to time space?
Question one asks whether or not the entire ad is subject to 102.17 and therefore yes or no to two-thirds, one-third.
Mm-hmm.
Question two
is time-space.
Is time-space.
Yeah. Thank you.
Based on the solicitation, which part is the solicitation?
Yeah. Vice Chair.
Following up on some of my colleagues' earlier questions and while, yes, we are here to answer a specific advisory opinion request based on specific facts, it is certainly quite common for commissioners to ask requesters hypotheticals. If we were to say yes to your request, what would it mean in this context or in that context? So the commission recently authorized a member of Congress to set up a joint fundraising committee to super PAC. I didn't agree with that, but that's what the commission did. If a joint fundraising committee that included a super PAC were to be set up and we were to say yes to your request, could the super PAC, which collects money from corporations and labor organizations, then also pay for if they were allocated 95% of the proceeds of whatever came in when people whipped out their cell phone and grabbed the QR code and made contributions. Under, if we were to say yes to you, would then that super PAC be able to pay for 95% of the campaign ad?
I appreciate the question, Vice Chair Longstreth. I think that there is a limiting principle, that hypothetical, in the joint fundraising regulations, which are clear that BCRA overrides the ability to fundraise currently, such that you could not raise more than $5,000 for a super PAC. So to make that effective, you would have to stack a bunch of super PACs, but a $5,000 limit won't get you to paying for a TV ad, I don't think. I think you could stack a bunch of super PACs, and certainly there's a concern that we raise in our comments that nothing would stop you from stacking leadership PACs, a bunch of different super PACs, but you would have to do some stacking because BCRA would override the ability to solicit unlimited funds into that.
Thank you.
Yeah, please.
Thank you for that answer. If a party committee were to set up a joint fundraiser with a candidate and stipulate that the proceeds were going largely to what we colloquially call the promnibus funds, the legal expense accounts, the building funds, convention accounts, could the party committee then take those funds that were presumably raised for legal expenses, building funds, and convention expenses, and again, pay if the formula was 95%, pay 95% out of those funds for candidate advertising?
So on this question, I'm going to be clear that this is not something I've discussed with my clients, so I'm going to answer this as a practitioner because I appreciate this is not within the confines of the request, so I just want to be transparent on that. I believe that is a fundamentally different question in a way that it's an even more difficult question than the one that requesters are posing to the commission, because when Congress authorized the addition of those accounts, it strictly limited their purposes to the financing of legal proceedings and the construction and renovation of party headquarters building. And the idea that Congress intended those accounts to be paid for candidate advertising is difficult to reconcile with the plain statutory language. So I would suggest that should the commission approve this opinion today and say this is all go forth, two-thirds, one-third, that's legal, that it would not protect or authorize the use of those additional accounts, because that is materially distinguishable from the facts that we are presenting here today.
Thank you. You said earlier that joint fundraising committees until this cycle have not been running television ads. I assume it follows from that, but they also have not been doing solicitations via television. My understanding of joint fundraising committees, and I appreciate your perspective on this, is that they're not primarily vehicles for small dollar donors, because if you're only giving $25, and that would go to whoever gets the first slug of money in the joint fundraising agreement, then it wouldn't really do much good to do that from the joint fundraising committee, because they're directly to the committee. But these joint fundraising committees are basically set up to attract large dollar donors who can, in some of these, I forget off the top of my head how much money would be the max that somebody could contribute to your joint fundraising committee. Could you remind me of that?
It would be well over, well, it depends if you're including the additional accounts. I'm sorry. So under this iteration, not as much. But if you start including the additional account, you're nearing $300,000.
So ideally, when joint fundraising committees are soliciting, they are basically looking for the high dollar donors to contribute, because otherwise it doesn't really make sense to contribute to a joint fundraising committee. Am I right on that?
I think that joint fundraising can take different forms, but I think, again, just using our practical brains, when you think about fundraising and you think about how much it costs to attempt to raise money, television, I think the reason we haven't seen joint fundraising happen over television, or any fundraising happening over television, is because the cost of effectuating a fundraising act over television is very high. A TV buy is the most expensive thing in any campaign budget. I've never seen a campaign budget where the largest line item is not television, right? We're talking millions and millions of dollars. So you're spending a lot of money to get that fundraising ask out in return for what I would assume would be a relatively small amount of money back. So I think practically in this case, that is actually why you don't see this happening over TV, because if your goal was really to raise money, spending $1 million on a TV buy to do it is a pretty bad way to maximize your fundraising returns.
Thank you. Colleagues? Yeah, Commissioner Dickerson.
Switching to the disclaimer question. You started with the windup that a regulation can't oust the statute. I don't disagree with you on that. Let me lay some foundation. Is it your client's position that the QR code satisfies the disclaimer requirement under the regulation, or is this, do they want us to say no to that question?
We're asking the question because, again, I've never advised, because I've never dealt with joint fundraising, television advertising, right? So it's a new question, both the client and myself, as to how the disclaimer requirements apply to television ad. Their 110.11 is very clear about how the disclaimer requirements apply to a television ad, right? But the joint fundraising regulations just say every solicitation for contributions must have a fundraising notice without more.
So what's the statutory basis for that?
There isn't one.
Well, that's what I'm confused by, because you're on question one, you're pounding the table about how we have this regulation unmoored from the statute and therefore we should say no. I know you're saying yes, but I still haven't heard an argument from you on why I should say yes to your client's request, which is odd. And then we get to the second part where we've also got a regulation unmoored to the statute, but you seem to be suggesting that it does apply. So which one is it?
I think that there's a disconnect between the two of us on the argument as to the first issue. I'm not suggesting that a commission regulation shouldn't be given effect. What I am saying is that it is a fundamental principle of administrative law and the boundaries of this body's authority that a regulation cannot be read to override a statute. So essentially, if there is a statute on point, it trumps a regulation that would contradict that statute.
I'm not here to say the joint fundraising regulations themselves are impermissible. I'm certainly not saying that. All I'm saying is, when do those joint fundraising regulations apply over and above a statute? So with respect to the disclaimer question, I take no issue or see no invalidity in the joint fundraising regulation saying you need a fundraising notice on a solicitation. In the first question, the question I struggle with, my client struggles with, is whether the regulation that says you can jointly fundraise and raise money, and because there's a benefit to that fundraising, you can split up that benefit according to funds received, whether that trumps the statutory language and the commission's implementing regulations that govern communications.
I'm not sure I'm convinced by that, but it answers my question. Thank you.
Colleagues, other questions for policy or for requester's counsel? Yeah, Commissioner Limbaugh.
Well, assuming we're kind of moving toward the vote, I feel like I should telegraph where I am here, and that's that. Sorry, I'll move closer. I try everything possible to find a way to get to four votes on these kinds of requests to make sure that everyone's playing under the same rules. And I've tried to twist my brain and the law in different ways so that I could actually get there. And I just can't bring myself to do it under these facts. It's just saying yes is just fundamentally the wrong answer. And the end results and seeing around the corners just amount to, you know, destruction. And there's no end limit here, right? Like, somebody could put up a QR code for a quarter of a second and have it be completely transparent. And then I don't know how my colleagues would vote in an enforcement matter. I don't know how they would vote if this was using the building and legal fund. And to me, those are just far too many risks. I think if this had more to it, if the solicitation was for half of the ad, well, that starts to bring it into a real solicitation territory here. But when I see this just coming up in the 4-second disclaimer screen, that is not a real solicitation. We time and time again make the determination of what is a solicitation and what isn't. And just slapping a solicitation on an ad doesn't make it a solicitation. And I think we've said that as a group a number of different times. Unfortunately, I really do not want to split on this, but assuming my colleagues who may have been thinking about voting yes are not switching their vote, that's unfortunately the outcome I see.
Yeah, Commissioner Dickerson.
Thank you. I'm frustrated by this one because I share my colleague's view. Advisory opinions are historically one of the things that works around here. It's been a great deal of effort to restore that machinery to functioning order. And I think it's extraordinary to have a request that comes in where the attorneys for a requester declined to make an argument in favor of the request, tell us that they've advised the client that it's illegal. I'm going to assume your client waived that, but I would never say that in court. And just basically ask us to vote it down. It feels to me like the request is on both sides of the question. And if it were not for the fact that the statute requires me to issue an opinion, if it was not mandatory language in the statute, I'm going to be perfectly frank that I would be abstaining, and I would be kicking this as improvident. I think this is not what is intended as an advisory opinion by the statute, with all respect to my colleague. Now let me finish. I'm going to give you the request that your client asked for. I think it is a close question. I take my colleague's concerns. I think 4 seconds is what Congress said was adequate to convey information for purposes of a disclaimer. I think by analogy, that's good enough here. But this approach to advisory opinions risks significant structural damage to the ability of the commission, especially in expedited consideration contexts, especially in election years, to give guidance to people who actually want to do things. And I would really encourage my colleagues and the bar to think seriously before we weaponize another aspect of the commission's procedures.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Tim. It certainly is not unique in commission history for somebody to come in and say, we see stuff going on out there that we didn't think was legal. So we're afraid to do it because we don't think it's legal, but we also don't want to be disadvantaged. So if the commission disagrees with us, we need to have the answer to that. We need to know from the commission, if you guys think it's legal, then sure, we're going to go right ahead and do it. Because otherwise you've got an unlevel playing field. And that's just not fair. So I don't see anything remotely improvident about this request. And if you'd like to comment on that, I'm happy to.
Yes, I would very much like to respond. Because I think I have tried personally as a practitioner to show great respect for this body. And I am sorry if you have gotten a different impression on this request. So I want to be, again, very clear. First, I have not advised my client that this conduct is illegal. I've advised my client there are serious questions. There's a serious ambiguity in the law here. This has never been done before. The commission has never answered this question. We're talking about an extraordinary amount of spending. And as a lawyer, it requires you to look at a statute that has a general rule in it that if you spend money to help your candidate, it's a contribution, and rely on a regulation to trump that statute. I'm not saying there's no argument. There's an argument. The argument is that because there's any solicitation in the communication, the regulation trumps statute. That's the argument, right? We all know the argument. It's been submitted by every commenter under the sun. I have serious concerns that a judge, should this end up in court, is going to start with the statute and answer this question very differently. Because the statute says expenditures made by the DSCC to influence a candidate's election, contribution, subject to contribution limits. So I have very, very grave concerns, absent the protection of advisory opinion, that you, again, it's unique to this body. If you get an advisory opinion, my client cannot then be fined by a federal judge for doing what the commission has said is legal. That's why I'm here, because my client wants to do this. What I have in front of me is a very clear statute and a regulation that applies squarely in the context of raising money and mentions nothing about communications, only mentions events. And that is a very difficult position as a practitioner to tell your client, yes, because it is my personal opinion that there is real risk that a federal judge looking at the plain text of the law this body is charged with enforcing is going to say that is nonsense. The statute says if you send money to help a candidate, contribution. And if this opinion is granted today, what the commission will say is because there is a 4-second solicitation and we passed a regulation that authorizes joint fundraising, we're writing that statutory requirement out. And it's very difficult for me to see a judge agreeing with that. So that's why I'm here, because my client wants to engage in conduct. They want to do it. And it is my advice as our counsel that if they're going to do it, they should have the protection of advisory opinion, because otherwise I'm concerned. That is why I'm here. I believe in this process. I think it's critically important because it provides that protection.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Commissioner Dickerson. And while we're giving personal opinions, I think you can read the conversation you had with Commissioner Lindenbaum as saying that if your client were willing to put that QR code on for a more material portion of the ad, you'd be getting a yes. And, you know, it's up to your client whether they want to resubmit the request in a way that addresses my colleague's concerns. But that seems like a significant development at the table. And if I were advising someone, I might take that into account.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lindenbaum.
I think that that is something that I would be considering. I think the facts kind of depend, and that's something that it seems to me more reasonable than what is here. You know, it is, you know, the requester is welcome to take that up or not. But what they're asking for is the set of facts that are here. And I don't think it's their responsibility to change the request according to what I, you know, think I could get more comfortable with.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a comment about the QR code. Where council was asked earlier whether the QR code constituted a solicitation, and you said yes. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on that. The ad that you proposed includes language at the end that says, join my team and donate now. So there is a clear solicitation by candidate in the text of the ad. So if that language wasn't there, if it was just join my team or some vague thing that did not actually refer to any kind of donation, I would not view flashing a QR code that we know very, very, very few people are going to actually have their phone at the ready and in that 4 seconds, or even if it was longer than 4 seconds, how many people are actually going to take a picture of the QR code and follow it to see where it leads? I would suspect very, very few. I don't think that a QR code by itself with no other language about donating money or soliciting, I don't think that's.
Let me ask about one additional thing, just to clarify something. You've had discussion about this to some degree with Commissioner Dickerson. So I just want to make sure I understand generally the SEC's position. The SEC's position with respect to question one is that it believes that the correct legal answer is no, but your position is that if the answer, you know, that the reason that this is a proper advisory opinion request is because if the answer is yes, you would like to engage in that conduct. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. That is a similar argument that your client made 2 years ago with respect to advisory opinion 2022-21 with respect to legal proceedings funds. You were here for that one as well, in which a similar stipulation was made that they thought the answer was no, or I think they wanted clear guidance on the question so they could get engaged in the proposed advertisements with respect to the legal proceedings fund. Did your client ever engage in those ads that we approved 2 years ago?
They did not. And there are, I'm going to try and answer the question without breaking privilege.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but the question is basically a follow-up question, which is you made the representation that you wanted to engage in that same activity if you got a yes answer, and that it wasn't actually a pretext for an attack on someone else's conduct, that you actually wanted to do it in yourself. And so my follow-up question is, did you ever actually do it yourselves, or did your client?
No, and I will say, without giving specific reasons that would break privilege, in general, I think all commissioners as experts in this field can understand that the nature of budgets change on a day-by-day basis, and what you can afford to do, whether or not you want to or not, can sometimes change in very real time. The intent at the time was to engage with the conduct. The intent at this time is to engage with the conduct, but representation to the commission is faithful. Budgetary restraints can sometimes change what you're able to do in real time in October of an election.
Thanks. Commissioner Broussard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just think that we're going a little bit of extremely beyond the bounds when the commission itself starts asking counsel about privileges and knowing that they are putting them at risk of disclosing some of those privileges. So I appreciate you taking the time to answer it, but we all know that the fact that you gave an answer that talked about those boundaries, that's your choice. But when we use this platform as a means to do it, I think it's not appropriate. I can appreciate that you wanted to ask the question, you asked it, but I don't think that we should be using our platform to ask people to disclose what could be potentially privileged between their clients. So,
well, respectfully, the only question, I understand, and I'm responding. My response is that the question was whether the ads were run. I don't know how that's privileged.
That she had through privilege.
I was asking a factual question about whether the ads were run.
I disagree.
Colleagues, any other questions for counsel for the requesters, rather? Maybe some appropriate motion. Commissioner Dickerson?
I do this with great trepidation. And this is a sincere question, because I care a lot about administrative law, and I care a lot about litigation risk at this agency. I made my career creating litigation risk for this agency. Like, I get the game. My question is this: like, it seems to me, again, that for question one, you're saying there is a regulation. You've said that we need to give regulations effect, but we shouldn't give this regulation effect. And then turning to question C and saying, in that case, you should give the regulation effect. And I guess, and if you don't have an answer, that's fine. These are deep questions of post-Loper Bright administrative law. This is, the courts are going to have to figure out the broad lines of exactly how regulations work going forward. But I'm really sincerely confused by an argument that I should give effect to one regulation or not another as a commissioner. I understand as a judge, as a member of Congress, fine, different job. But if you think regulations have the force of law, how can you take those contradictory positions and how do you reconcile them?
I very much appreciate this question because I think it is the crucial question here, and it's one I thought a lot about. I'm not suggesting that the commission does not give effect to the Joint Financing Regulation. I agree with you that the commission should give effect to regulation that it promulgated. The fundamental question that I'm asking in this request, and maybe it helps to back out from question one and question two, and just pose the question to the commission of, if you see the ad that we propose, right, which has 26 seconds of advocacy, and I use advocacy, you can call it something else, but the script is a script, right? 26 seconds of a script that is about a candidate, and then at the very end, there's a QR code and a oral solicitation, which collectively, I think we can all agree a solicitation is present, whether it's the QR code or the oral part, there's a solicitation. When the commission looks at 52 USC 30116 plus 102.17 plus 109.21 and 109.37, which all need to be given effect, how does it apply that statute and those three regulations to judge when it is appropriate for a joint fundraising committee to pay for that advertisement on a funds received basis? I think that the only way the commission can interpret its joint fundraising regulation in a way that is not contrary to the statute is to say only when joint fundraising is present, when there is a solicitation. Because if you interpret the regulation, which again should be given effect, but if you interpret that regulation to say anytime there is the most passing solicitation on a communication, the allocation method set forth in 109.27 trumps the statute. You have interpreted a regulation contrary to statute in violation of administrative law principles. That is a fundamental problem I see. And I've advised my client, again, just being frank with the commission, that it is very difficult for me to see how a commission can read 102.17 to mean anytime there is any solicitation on a communication, that regulation now trumps 30116 and the commission's implementing regulations of that statute.
Thank you.
Anything else, colleagues? Maybe some appropriate motions. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In advisory opinion 2024-13, the SEC et al., I move approval of agenda document number 24-42-E1, which is described as revised draft.
Thank you very much to the Vice Chair. Colleagues, any debate on that motion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. No.
No.
That motion fails by a vote of 3-3. The Vice Chair, Commissioner Broussard, Commissioner Lindenbaum in favor, myself, Commissioner Dickerson, and Commissioner Traynor opposed. Any additional motions? I'll happy to make one myself. So in draft advisory opinion 2024-13, DSCC, Montanans for Tester and Gallego for Arizona, I move approval of agenda document number 24-42-A, which is draft A. Colleagues, any debate on that motion? Seeing none, all of those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
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 All right, that motion fails by a vote of 3-3. Myself, Commissioner Dickerson, Commissioner Traynor in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Broussard, and Commissioner Lindenbaum Opposed? And I will look over to policy for assurances that they will issue the appropriate closeout letter. Thank you very much.